This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I have PenFed, that's a fact.
I have PenFed, that's a fact.
My credit card purchases get me cash back.
My credit card purchases get me cash back.
No one else gets these rewards.
Sergeant, that is just plain untrue.
What in tarnation?
Sir, PenFed's PowerCash Rewards Card isn't just for military members. Anyone can get cash back on all purchases.
Ah, Figgins, you've ruined my favorite song.
PenFed Credit Union. Visit PenFed.org/PowerCash. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
Time to fire up the grill.
Time to go to Total Wine and find the perfect flavor to pair with those burgers.
Ooh, I love their beer cooler.
You love their prices even more.
Wondrous selection, helpful guides, ridiculously low prices. Total Wine and more.
And welcome to the Fat Back 4. There's no football this week. The international stuff doesn't count. It's not real football, and we've decided that during the week. So what we're going to do is, this show is all about Jurgen Klopp. Jurgen Klopp is 3 years in charge of Liverpool Football Club as of last Tuesday, I think it was. So with me this evening, I have Marty, I have Grizz, and I have Ian. And we're going to go through, Jurgen Klopp, the 3 years from day one, and probably a few days before that, right up until now, and the outlook we have for Liverpool Football Club under his tenure. Let's get into it. On the 8th of October 2015, Liverpool agreed a deal for Jurgen Klopp to become the new manager. It's a bit of a surprise, as Jurgen Klopp had just finished up with Dortmund a couple of months previous. And he was on a break, apparently. Liverpool managed to turn the screw, get the job done, and get him in as a Liverpool manager. This comes on the back of Brendan Rodgers, a near title win in 2013-14, an indifferent kind of spell, 14-15. And then a start, I suppose, to the season where, you know, after 8 games, he has 12 points. His last game in charge is a 1-0 draw at Everton, Goodison Park. Lads, the 8th of October 2015, as I've said before, a significant day probably in the history of Liverpool Football Club. Ian, I come to you. With Rodgers looking on the way out, and, the day before the Everton game, the rumour goes around that he will be sacked and that Jurgen Klopp is the man Liverpool want. Had you got mixed feelings with Klopp having to leave? Or not Klopp having to leave, with it looks like Rodgers leaving the club, but Klopp being the man coming in. Did you feel a little bit sorry for Brendan Rodgers, or was it pure excitement? Look at this manager we've just got.
No, I didn't feel sorry for him. He fucked up. He was good for a while, but then I think we start. Listen, when someone's riding on the crest of a wave, everything they say seems like you know, very, very, like, intelligent and real good foresight and all that. When you start, when this, you start to tilt a bit towards, like, it's not performance to the highest level, he starts to sound a little bit trite when you come out with stuff. And he started to come out with stuff that just, it was just bullshit, basically. Like, we were after players that we knew we were after and we wouldn't get them, and he'd say we're not after them and all that. But he should have went after we lost against Stoke 6-1. End of. That should have been it. Gone. But enough about him. Anyone who knows me previous to even, like, before this podcast or anything like that will know that Jürgen Klopp's, like, been one of my favourite coaches for a few years. Massive, massive fan. If I could have picked anyone, I would have chosen him. When the rumours started going around that we were linked with him, I couldn't believe it, to be honest. I was so overjoyed. I think he was on Aldi for 4 months running, and it was supposed to be a year. But I think certain things just fit. And his persona, his passion, all of the things, his ethics, all that, they all align themselves with our club. He's a perfect manager, and I don't think, I mean, we'll get onto it later on, but I don't think there's too many clubs in world football that wouldn't swap their manager for someone else. But I think Liverpool are one of those clubs, maybe City, possibly even Atletico Madrid, and then I think you're struggling there to find someone who won't swap after that. So we're in a very, very envious position.
Yeah, how can you not love him? How can you not love the man? Yeah, absolutely. Grizz, Ian said there that you know, it's, I'm probably paraphrasing him when I say it's a rootless game, and Rodgers' time has run out. But for us, you know, I've seen fans of opposition clubs, because I remember it well when this was rumoured that Jürgen Klopp was going to be the next Liverpool manager. I remember other clubs posting on social media, certain platforms, and saying, do they honestly think they're getting Jürgen Klopp as the manager? And, you know, all these laughing, crying emojis. But this, you know, I hate to use the term statement of intent, Grizz, but this was a massive, massive move from Liverpool Football Club.
Yeah, I just want to comment on your beard first, Gav. It looks really nice. Keep it.
Yeah, man, I will. Thank you. I'm just a lazy cunt. Come on.
Make it nice. Keep it. Yeah, I remember when Rodgers was sacked, and then the rumours at the time, I remember, were it was either Ancelotti or Klopp. I remember it was like, you know, they were saying, oh, is it going to be Ancelotti? Is it going to be Klopp? And I remember at the time, not sure. I'm going to admit, I wasn't totally convinced that I wanted Klopp over Ancelotti. You know, Ancelotti being one of the, you know, the world's greatest managers, or presently, and of part, you know, of his past credentials as well. So, you know, I remember at the time thinking, I remember thinking that if fans, you know, other clubs fans saying that we're, you know, we deluded thinking we're going to get Klopp. Well, if we weren't going to get Klopp, we probably would have ended up with Ancelotti. I think the other name was that stupid knob, wasn't it? Martinez from, was he at Swansea at the time? Was he at Swansea at the time, lads? I think he was, wasn't he?
No.
I thought we were linked with him after we got Rodgers. He was linked when, before we got Rodgers,
right? Yeah. I beg your pardon. So, I mean, either way,
Dave Thompson was linked a bit as well, I remember him.
So my point being, either way, we were linked with big names. So it was always going to be one of the most crucial decisions of FSG's tenure. And I think it's safe to say, and I think we're absolutely over the moon to say, they made the best decision possible. Because as Ian says, at where we were as a club, in terms of stature, in terms of on the pitch, off the pitch, I think he just sort of, I just think he fitted everything what she needed at that stage of their ownership as well. So I thought it was a brilliant, brilliant decision by FSG at the time.
Yeah, it's, for me, it's a thing where, you know, a lot of people are throwing around, oh, FSG went for the cheap option with Rodgers. You know, if you look at the Dalglish tenure, where they bring him in, they look at it and they spend a decent amount of money with Dalglish and they get rid of him. It was a real, Marty, it was a real kind of, it was the next step, it was the next level sort of move from the owners, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think this is, you know, they went FSG took the club over, obviously they had a money ball policy. They wanted to go with a young manager. They wanted to try and do it, you know, the fresh, you know, fresh way, fresh approach, you know, kind of build low output, you know, low input, high output kind of thing with transfers, managers, etc. And I think, you know, the penny finally dropped for the club. You know, if they wanted to compete at the highest level, they're going to have to, you know, get the best this about. And I think then, now, you know, Jurgen Klopp is one of the best managers in the world. I think he's enhanced his profile as much as he's helped us since he's come in. I think the boys have summed it up beautifully. The two front runners were obviously Ancelotti and Klopp. And I think certain managers need certain climates to thrive under. And I think if you look at Ancelotti, I don't want to call Ancelotti a checkbook manager because he's much more than that. But the rumours were that Ancelotti wanted to completely strip the team down straight away, and it would have been huge investment from day one, whereas Klopp was happy to kind of, you know, look at the team, see who he could keep, see if there's anything he can improve. And I think, you know, looking at Liverpool, the way they operate and the way that Klopp operates, that, as Ian and Grizz said, you know, it's just, it's a perfect match. I think anyone that knew Klopp before here at Dortmund could see it, and I think it's the best signing Liverpool Football Club have made in a long, long time.
Yeah, it is, and if you count it as a signing, it's a massive move. Just the Ancelotti thing is interesting because, you know, he wants to strip the team back down. You know, Ancelotti, I don't know if he's known for that, but he would have a certain way of playing. He probably looked at that squad and thought, no, I want certain type of players. He wasn't willing to take the time to work with them, and we probably hadn't got the time. You know, we'd gone through Rodgers on 13-14. We'd lost Suarez. We'd got a significant amount of money at the time. We spent badly, let's be perfectly honest about it. So we needed to make a move on this, and with Klopp, but we also needed to bring someone in that could work with the squad that was there, improve what was there, and over time, I suppose, and we go on to talk about this later, over time develop that squad. But look, I'll come on to the first game under Klopp, and I remember where I was sitting in the pub watching it on my own, because I went down to watch this. I wanted to give it my full attention, and I wanted to see, is there any change? You know, I think he's appointed on the 8th. I don't think he plays till about the 22nd, I think it is. Or maybe it's a week or so later, because it's during the international break, I think. But in the team that day, right, is Mignolet, Klein, Sacco, Moreno, Skrtel, Milner, Coutinho, Lallana, Lucas, Jean and Origi. I'll tell you what I noticed, Ian. First off the bat, for the week going into this game, it was about, oh, Lallana, you know, we won't be able to keep up with this. This heavy metal football that was bandied around for a week. And Lallana ran the legs off himself and came off after about, I think, I'm guessing here, about 75-ish. And you could see straight away, Klopp had a way of playing. He had a way he wanted his players to react to him. And he got it from the outset, didn't he? Because he pressed the life out of Spurs in a nil-all draw that day.
Yeah, I think out of every player we had, I think Lallana bought into what Klopp was after right away. I mean, he was the first one to do it. We spoke about it in the past, how he was the trigger for the press and people that follow his lead and stuff like that. So we got into it. I remember him coming off and Klopp hugging him, and he looked like he was about to go unconscious. He was that tired. But like Klopp said, like, he didn't try and change too much in the first couple of weeks, because you just can't in a couple of weeks, you know what I mean? Even more so, there's still some all right players in that starting 11. There's some dross, but there's still some all right players. I think where it really shows how much we've improved, if you go and have a look at the bench was horrific. Really poor bench. It had, like, Jordan Sinclair was on it as well, I think.
Yeah, I'll give you the bench, Ian. Bogdan, Colo Torre, Randall, Allen, Oyeb, Teixeira and Jerome Sinclair.
Yeah, it's shocking, isn't it? Shocking. Most of them don't play top flight football anymore. That's how bad that bench was. But in a short space, was it Spurs 0-0? Was that the game?
Spurs 0-0, yeah. Was the game, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not an easy fix there. Pochettino's got them well drilled and stuff, and I think he just wanted to keep it tight. If you'd offered him 0-0 before the game, I think he'd have bit your hand off for it. But you didn't really see too much change. You could see little bits of, like I say, Lallana running his arse off and stuff like that. But it's very hard to get a grasp of a manager, like, in just 2 weeks, you know what I mean? But I think it was more apparent which players bought into it immediately, do you know what I mean? And then there was other players that were never going to. And like the likes of like Lucas, he couldn't play Klopp style. He hung around longer because he was useful as a utility player and he was a really good fella around the squad. But he was never going to be able to play the high intensity. He weren't quick enough, couldn't cover the ground. Whereas Lallana could, do you know what I mean? Players like that could. So I think he saw early doors what type of player he was looking for. But it takes a bit longer than 2 weeks, like.
Yeah, it's just when I'm talking about the difference, I could see it was literally Detroit to swarm all over Spurs and the work rate for me. Like, he probably is going into that game thinking, right, I don't really know what I have, because he's not planning on this job. So he's coming in, he has a week to look at them, and he's thinking, what do I have? I'll put these out on the pitch and I'm going to just make sure effort, and pressing and give everything you possibly can. I think he'd be happy going off that pitch. Does he take a nil-all draw at the start? He probably does. Does he take a 1-0 defeat? He probably does. But he wants to see, he takes a 1-0 defeat in the circumstance that them players gave everything for me, and I know I can rely on them for a certain amount of things. Now, as we go along in the piece, you'll see that certain players and disappearing, some quickly, some not so quickly. Grizz, he starts with Spurs, all right? He goes on and I think he draws with Ruben Kazan. He loses to Palace at home. And then the game then that comes is the 4-1 away at Man City on the 24th of November 2015. And this is one where, for the first 30 minutes, you've seen Klopp's football starting to kick in and kick in at an unbelievable rate, because they tore City apart for 43 minutes of that first half before Aguero gets one back, if I remember right. But are you seeing then, Grizz, early on, this is what he wants, and all the people that spoke about it, about his style, it's not coming to fruition, I suppose, but coming, and it's having an impact a lot earlier than you or me or the general fan base would have thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know, you read out that team and you read out that subs bench, and you know, Carlo Ancelotti was right, wasn't he? He was right to want to fucking strip down that squad, because that was one horrific squad. And I actually think, looking back now that we're reminiscing over his first sort of year, well, he came in a couple of months into it, didn't he? But now that we're reminiscing, it's so underrated, the job that he done in that first season and how far he took us. Because you've got to remember, he took us to two finals with that squad that we've just mentioned. And, you know, we puked up at the subs bench. That Man City game was, you know, last week we talked about the Chelsea game when we played Chelsea a couple of weeks ago. And I was salivating over how quick Sarri's had an impact at Chelsea. Well, it's very similar to how Klopp had an impact at Liverpool, because, as you mentioned, it was only into sort of, I don't know exactly what game week it was that we played that City 4-1. But that's when we saw the vision that he's got for this football club, for this football team. The famous gegenpressing. I mean, City, to this very day, haven't recovered and haven't worked out how to play against us.
It would have been Grizz, I think about the 11th league game of the season. It would have been his fourth in charge.
Fourth or fifth, something like that?
Yeah.
And you know, I remember watching that game and thinking, fucking hell, if this is the journey we're going on with Klopp, then I'm all up for it. Look, it was breathtaking. That was when we first saw evidence of it really clicking. I mean, we talked about the Spurs game earlier, but even the Spurs game, I don't know if you guys remember, but we had enough clear-cut chances to win it. I think Phil Coutinho misses near enough an open goal when it's laid across him or something. And so that would have been an amazing start. But that Man City game, and I think, was Pep into his second season at that time at City? Because Pep would have had a season with City, so he would have known his players far more than Klopp knew Liverpool as the Liverpool players. But still, Klopp had such a major effect on our players. And most, I know it's a cliche, but they really, you could see the players busting a gut for this new manager, and that was a very positive sign of things to come.
Yeah, absolutely. That game, for me, it showed how he wanted his team to press high. All this sort of stuff about pressing triggers, and Lallana was at the forefront of it. Again, that player that people thought, no, he won't be able to keep pace with this, but he's the trigger. He goes, he wins ball, you know, and they play around City. they really do. I think it's the third one where he does a lovely backheel heel from Jean, puts in, it might have been Coutinho, he knocks in Firmino, but it was outstanding football. Skirtle scores a beautiful volley as well to make it 4-1 early enough in the second half. Marty, I'm going to move around a little bit because, let's be honest about it, without the red tinted glasses on, there was a big media love-in with Klopp when he signs on the dotted line for Liverpool. You know, he's that loss to Palace is kind of overlooked. You know, it's not his squad. Different things like that. They're going along in this Europa League campaign. But the Man City one, it's a big win. But if we throw it on about another month, it's the 13th of December 2015, and what happens there is we have West Brom at home, and you know the love in is continuing. And this is probably the first bit of, I don't know if it's bad press he gets, but it's a little bit mocking is the word I'd use. They get a late deflected goal to make it 2-2 at home to West Brom, and Klopp brings the team and subs to the cup afterwards as if to salute them as, you know, kind of a bonding exercise, I suppose. When you seen this, did you cringe a little bit? Did you think, okay, that's how we do things? Or was it an act of defiance? What way did you find this? Because for me, it was the first time I seen not people torn on Klopp, but mock his ideas a little bit.
Yeah, by all accounts, in the Bundesliga, it happens quite often, that kind of thing. They're very appreciative of their fans over there. But, I mean, look, you've got, as Liverpool fans, you know, you kind of sometimes have to forget what the media say or forget what rival fans say. You know, we had to look at the bigger picture at the time. And, you know, let's not forget, like, he's still early in his tenure at Liverpool. And, you know, the fan base at the time is still, you know, it's still hurting. Obviously, we've just had a real couple of average seasons under Rodgers after the title hunt. You know, I remember when I don't know if it was still this season when Klopp came in, but I think, you know, the home game against Carlisle, was it, in the cup where we went to penalties, and it was just horrendous. And I think it was a week before or a couple of weeks before, we just lost at home to Palace, was it? And Klopp came out quite publicly in the press conference and said that, you know, he saw the fans leaving in the sort of the 82nd, 83rd minute, and he'd, you know, he said he never felt quite so alone. And then what he got from that were the fans stayed until the very end. You know, that Origi goal was deflected. It was a shit game. The fans were there till full time. And that was Klopp and the players saying, look, we've seen that reaction, you know, and we appreciate it. And you're going to get the rival fans, you know, giving it, oh, look, you know, they're celebrating the draw against West Brom. But you know, fuck them. You know, this was that moment for me was the moment when Jurgen Klopp, the players and the fans bonded. That was when, you know, Jurgen Klopp sent out a rally cry to the fans. The fans answered.
They bonded. What did you say?
They bonded, Grizz, is what he said.
Bonded.
Yeah.
Sorry.
yeah, Klopp sent out a rallying cry in the press conference, and the fans answered, and that was his way. You know, you remember, he's not English, he's German. They have their way of doing things, and that is his way of saying, you know, I appreciate it. We know you're there. And that was I think that was a big part in creating the bond, Grizz, between the fans and Klopp and the team. So, yeah, you know, bollocks to what everyone else says.
Yeah, bollocks to what anyone else says. Yeah, you have the right attitude.
Dad, do you know, can I just put in there?
Of course you can, you do anyway. Go on.
Do you know what it was? If it continued doing that, then we could have said it's cringe and we don't really appeal to that. It doesn't really appeal to our story. But the fact that he learned from it very quickly, he saw the reaction from media and etc. Right, he done it for a purpose. It wasn't ever going to be a regular thing like he had it at Dortmund. Do you remember he specifically said, this is Liverpool, that was Dortmund, it's totally different, right? But you've got to remember, there are some things ingrained in him in terms of how he bonds players and teams and crowds and unites them. And this was just one incident or one sort of act that he'd done with the team and the players all together. I don't think we did it again. I don't recall, unless it was like an amazing victory like the Dortmund one, where sort of it was a special occasion. But I don't think we'd done it. We didn't make it a regular thing. And that was another sign of Klopp always looking to learn and adjust to sort of this new culture in this new league.
Yeah, absolutely. And like Marty said, it was just his way of doing things. And even to this day, I think about it and think, probably wasn't, when I looked right, probably not for me at the time. But But now I look back at it and think, he can do what the fuck he wants, to be perfectly honest with you. He's a fair throwing players into the fucking cup for all I care. But, you know, the season was going on. The results weren't too bad. Some good, some bad. But it was an indifferent season as it went. But people were waiting for this breakout manic game involving Liverpool where it absolutely go off the rails and Klopp had looked like he's enjoying every single minute of it. That came on the 23rd of January, and when we went to Norwich, an absolutely ridiculous game of football, to be perfectly honest with you. Ian, we win that game 5-4, if my abacus is working properly. Lallana scores in the last minute. January signing Stephen Colker is the man causing all sorts of trouble in the box, but I remember going 4-4 in the last minute of that and going, oh, for fuck's sake. And then Lallana just pops up and bangs her in. You're thinking, oh, yeah, I'll have loads of this every single week. Were you the same? No, he doesn't want to talk to me. All right, that's okay.
Was that a question?
No, it wasn't a question. I was just telling you something. I was telling you about my big shop I done on Friday. Don't worry about it.
You went?
Oh, I went. I was going to do the big shop. I forgot something on Friday, so I went out to get it. I'm back now.
Did you get Jaffa Cakes? Did you get Jaffa Cakes?
No, I don't eat them. Don't eat them.
Ah, shit.
Yeah,
it tells you what you got today.
Did we discuss our favourite biscuit before, didn't we? We must do that again, because I think things have changed. It's moved on since we started this pod. Biscuits have changed in the last 12 months or so.
Ian,
my question was, that Norwich game is 5-4. We concede in the last minute, but then we go and score in the last minute, and it's bedlam. Klopp's glasses are getting fucking all over the place. There's a pile on the sideline. Were you like me? Were you thinking, yeah, I'll have this every week. 5-4 every week will do me.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's like Klopp ball, and to be honest with you, yeah, I don't think I could handle that every week. Jeremy, I'd look even older than I do now if that was the case every week, or I'd have like some sort of seizure or whatever. But I think the best part of that game, because we were woeful at the back, but we were brilliant going forward, and that was kind of our style on the clock for at least the first 18 months. But it was just the reaction of everyone when Lallana scored, top off, fans going mental. Clock going. We've never had a manager like that. You know what I mean? We had years of Rafa who wouldn't smile. And then Gerard Houllier, who, you know what I mean, wasn't much more animated than Rafa. Brendan Rodgers didn't really get involved. Kenny Dalglish wasn't a big celebrator really. So this was the first time we'd ever had a tracksuit manager here, and someone who was like fucking mental. You know what I mean? And would jump in the crowd and would egg everyone on. And when Lallana scored and he ran straight over to the boss, the gap or whatever, I think sometimes you see that happen, and I think it's a show. I mean, but this wasn't. This was, they all clearly loved the new boss. You know what I mean? They all wanted to impress him, but they clearly loved him. And his respect for them was reciprocated by him going mental and smashing his glasses, and it's ridiculous. And some people outside of Liverpool tried to say, oh, he looks like an idiot doing that. But there's not a single fan who doesn't want their manager to show that sort of passion when they score a last-minute winner. There's not a single fan who doesn't. And we had them, do you know what I mean? The style of football, it was coming along. At the beginning, he looked quite naive defensively, but he's proven since then that wasn't the case at all. It was a work in progress. But it was more of the highs and lows early on were a bit more obvious, do you know what I mean? But that was tremendous, right? That was tremendous. But on the other side, it was almost the exact opposite when we lost away to Bournemouth. Do you know what I mean? It was up and down all the time. It wasn't always an easy watch.
No, it wasn't always an easy watch. And I suppose it's good to look back at it now and the progression from October 2015 to now, and the different styles, the different players he's used, the different mentalities he's had going into games, the different ways he's tried to blitz people at times, and other times nullify a team. Nullify them, and when we nullify them, then we'll hurt them. It's progressed as we've gone along. I just want to touch on one more thing for this season, because I know we were in two finals in this season, and I want to get the finals in general nearer the end. But just one thing I want to touch on, and it's the UEFA Cup run or Europa League run or whatever they call it now. And you know, how lucky, I suppose, Graves, how lucky is he? Not so much lucky, but he draws United. You know, we do that all right. We're okay there. But it's the Dortmund game. How lucky is he, I suppose, in his fourth season to have a game like that where we're 1-1 going into the second leg. We go 2-0 down early. We go 3-1 down. And we manage to come back and turn this around. How good is it for a manager, Grizz, in his first couple of months to have that sort of game where Anfield nearly falls over with the emotion that's going on? I still watch videos to this day of it. Where it's just pure raw emotion and belief in a team and so early in his managerial career at Liverpool, a belief in the manager that anything is possible. That game, is it really big to him, even to this day?
Gab, do you notice that game sort of kind of proved the method to his madness to be correct? All that fist pumping during the early part of the season, the celebrations, what Ian said, at Norwich, they were sort of they were genuine. And all that sort of rallying cries that he'd done and waving to the crowd and everything, that Dortmund game was kind of the cherry on the cake for everything he had tried to work towards in that first season in terms of getting everyone together. And people can say what they want, but you don't come back from sort of games like that and the performance in the United game and the rest of the comebacks he made without having the players, as we've discussed before, really, really working their bollocks off for you and believing. Do you remember that first season coming to the end? That was when he started the doubters to believers phrase, didn't he? We need to start, you know, turning doubters from believers.
Yeah, he says that in one of his first interviews, and I think it actually comes back up near the end of the season. You're right.
And it's amazing because, as Ian says, what Klopp was to us was sort of us fans, but actually managing the club, if you know what I mean. He was representing the fans' passion. What we sort of, the reactions we have on the terraces, he was actually playing that out on the sidelines in the coach's box. And everyone thought he's just a passionate fan who just full of fist pumps. But then as we found out later, well, in the last sort of 12 months or so, there was always method to his madness, and it was progression. And we were seeing it sort of every month, the progression the team was making. And, you know, that Dortmund game was just sort of, for me, it was the finale. And it was a sort of the cherry on this cake in terms of the plan came to fruition. All the crowd was together, stayed till the end. Because you've got to remember, I think we were at one stage 3 goals behind. Were we 3 goals behind on aggregate or something at one stage? And the crowd never left, kept singing. And you know, he was proved right in the end, wasn't he? In terms of, you know, we need to be together.
Yeah, I think like you'll see Klopp has been at Anfield in a pre-season friendly with Dortmund, and he spoke when he signs about, you know, Anfield's special stadium, special club, you know, special atmospheres, Anfield under the lights, all this sort of stuff. But I think being the manager of Liverpool Football Club on a night like that is completely different to being, you know, not being the Liverpool manager and seeing it from the outside. I think being involved with that much emotion against his former club as well, you have to remember, it was something I think was special for him. And I think it opened his eyes a little bit as well, as much as it opened their eyes to him. I think it opened, you know, his eyes to us as well. You know, it was a perfect thing to happen, to all come together on a night like that. Just to close off that season, we finish 8th because I think we gambled on the Europa League and it doesn't really happen. We finish 8th. We actually finish behind Southampton and West Ham, which is fucking madness to think of nowadays. I'm going to go into 2016-17 season, and Marty, I'm going to come to you first. There's a lot of changes. He brings in Mane, he brings in Karius, Matip, Clavin, Manninger, and Wijnaldum. The list of players that leave, you know, you've Enrique, Torre, Rossiter, Teixeira, Sinclair, Yesel, Canos, Gertl, Oyeb, Allen, Smith, Benteke, Alberto, Balotelli, Alori. He does a clear out. He's taken this 7 months of football to really look at his squad and decide, right, this is who we don't want, and he does it. But we start the season, Marty, quite well. We've won loss in the opening 13, and the standout performances, I suppose, are Hull at home 5-1, Watford at home 6-1. And at that stage of the season, I think it's early November, it's probably the first week of November, Marty, and people are talking us up as these are playing electrifying football. You know, we're being talked as title challengers, and and we're blowing teams away. When we get to that stage, Marty, where we're putting teams away like this, are you actually thinking, could he do this? Could he do this in his first full season?
At the time, I did get caught up in the Klopp heavy metal football hype. With hindsight's a wonderful thing. You know, I think squad wise, we were still short. You think that was the year that obviously Chelsea won it, and their squad's ridiculous. I think that was the first season, wasn't it, that we saw Pep, and you know, it was just our defence wasn't, you know, at the back we weren't strong enough. Obviously we had the Karius, Mignolet, Schwab mess about situation. So at the time I probably did think, hold on a minute, you know, yeah, we looked good, but in hindsight, no, we didn't quite have the squad. I think we relied heavily on Mane that season, which is baffling, really, considering we didn't have him the season before. For him to come in and actually be the player we rely on, when you think, you know, we had Coutinho, Firmino, and Mane came in first season with the main man, really, wasn't he? And I think Marty, lack of squad depth.
Would that have been down to his pace? Because a lot of people the previous season have spoken about Liverpool's lack of direct penetrating pace, and he looked to fix that fairly quickly.
Yeah, pace was definitely a factor. I think obviously Klopp, the big part of Klopp's way is transition from defence to attack, and for that you need pace. Mane obviously was the kind of, he seems like the first cog for Liverpool for our attacking unit for that. So yeah, absolutely the pace, and much more. He's a quality operator, isn't he, Mane? You know, he when he's on song. He's got pace, he can finish, he can beat a man, you know, he's brilliant. But, in hindsight, we were a little bit short. But the objective was, it was always top four. You know, it was always get that top four, and, you know, anything else would have been a bonus. To sum it up, no, I don't think we were ever really sort of serious title contenders due to just the squad in quite a leaky back four.
Yeah, I got caught up, I'm being honest with you. If I remember rightly, I was at a wedding. Suffering from the day before, watching Liverpool against Watford, and even United fans around me were going, this is unreal to watch, and that's genuine. The United fan and an Arsenal fan sitting with me, and they both said, this is mind-blowing what they're doing. The speed, the walk rate, the speed, the power, everything about it, so clinical. They were talking Liverpool up as well, so that was, when you have someone, people like that talking them up, you've every right to do it as a Liverpool fan, I suppose. Ian, you mentioned earlier a game, I think it was yourself that mentioned a game earlier about Bournemouth, and this is on the 4th of December, and we lose the game 4-3. It probably goes down as when Karius and the doubts about Karius come around. You know, I think we're 1-0 and 3-1 up in this, and we end up losing the 4-3. Did this show, Ian, a little bit of naivety that Klopp may still have about the Premier League and how it works, or was it just we just weren't good enough on the day and it's one of those? Did you read anything more into it than just one of those days?
No, I do think it was a bit naive. I think he could have closed up shop at 3-1. I remember it because I was going to town the day with my mate, and I left the house and it was 3-1, and we got a taxi, and when we got into town we'd lost, and I thought I'd gone through some sort of shitty twilight zone, so I couldn't believe it. But yeah, it was a bit naive. The players at the time, it was still very mentally weak as well. So as soon as like one step back can be put, now if we have a Van Dijk the other day, he makes an error, it's a penalty. You don't think in the next 5 minutes he's going to do it again. You know they're going to like get the shit together and go, right, we've made a mistake, we're not doing it again. Back in those days, we were riddled with it, like mistake after mistake after. If we weren't scoring, we'd always look fragile mentally as well. And Bournemouth were not a good side. You know what I mean? They were okay, but they were not special. And I just think it was a bit naive from Klopp. I think he trusted his players a bit too much at times. I still think he can do that. But it's never just one of those days, mate. When you're 3-1 up away to a side, a lower mid-table side, it should never be one of those days. You know what I mean? You've caused it yourself. Because they can blow us away. Karius just went a bit shit, didn't he? I think he gave us like a prelude to what he was about. And he was at fault for the two of the goal. He was definitely at fault for the last goal when he palmed his stick back out. So I just think it was a combination, mate. A bit of naivety from Klopp. The mental fragility that we had as a squad anyway, which by the looks of things, he's now seen so far. And it's being, if anything, being a bit arrogant, just thinking this game won. It happens, you know, big sides think they've already won. 3-1 up on a side like Bournemouth, not long to go. You probably do think you've won. Maybe drop down a gear, and when you decide to score, and it's hard to regain the initiative again. So I just think it was a combination of a lot of things. I think Klopp learned a lot about some of his players that day, though.
Yeah, I think he learned a lot about his players, but I also think he learned a lot about the league. You know, he's probably looking in Germany going 3-1 up with whatever amount of minutes left. We'll see this out. I think the Premier League kind of bit him on the backside that day, because no team ever gives up. And if no matter what the team is, if you get ahead of steam against you and your players look anyway fragile, you'd be taken advantage of. And like you said, he learned something about certain players that day. I agree with you. We've about 20 minutes left, so I'm going to move it along. Grizz, I'm going to give you the last bit on the 2016 season, right? The last 10 games of the season, after going through a period where we had a very rocky period, the squad, I suppose, and its lack of depth started to show tiredness. We weren't on it. We really weren't. But in the last 10 games, we win 6, we draw 3, and the one defeat is at home to Palace again. But there's a different style. We start dogging games out. We start being a bit more pragmatic and you know, not being as gung-ho. That impressed me in those last 10 games, where we were able to change style, get results, and Klopp to, I suppose, you know, he adapts, and he adapts well with the squad that he has. Even though it's not completely what he wants, he adapts really, really well. We finish in 4th place, 76 points, 1 clear of Arsenal. It goes down to the last day. But Grizz, was that another stage in Klopp's development as Liverpool manager, where he has to change his style and do something slightly different in order to, you know, get to the end game and get it done?
Sorry, Gav Steve, I was sending me some shitty gifts.
Okay, well, stop. If you read gifts again, I'll just have to get rid of you.
No, I've blocked him.
Okay, you know, blocked him, yeah. That's fucking the perfect thing to do. Go on.
That patch, Gav, that last 10 games, really impressed me for the fact that everyone thought Klopp was this heavy metal, gung-ho type manager, only knows one way to play. And, you know, he had to play like that to salvage our season and rescue our season, because, as Ian says, there is, look, we can't always have these sort of rose-tinted glasses and say everything's been brilliant. And that patch from November to about February, where he refused to rotate. Do you remember there was a lot of controversy, or call it what you want, but sort of a lot of fans asking for rotation, but he stuck, and as Ian says, he was very loyal to the players, and that nearly cost him our top 4 place that season, and he salvaged it and rescued it. And I think that was a brilliant sign of a great manager for me, that he saw where it was going wrong, and he stopped, he abandoned that heavy metal football. And for those, as you mentioned, the last 10 games, he totally revamped our style, became more pragmatic. There were subtle changes in formation, some more blatant than subtle even. I think at times we even played with a back five, or totally revamped our midfield and made us far more difficult to beat. So, as Marty said earlier, our target for that season was mainly in the summer to flush out all the turds, and he did. I remember us getting really good money that summer, right? Talking about turds, yeah, you guys. Anyway, but I don't know, he...
Sorry, the guy. Absolute madman. Go on.
Yeah, I've lost trail of thought.
Of course you have.
Our target that season was to get top 4, and he managed to get that top 4, you know, by totally sort of revamping his style and even his methodology. And I thought it was a brilliant, positive sign of things to come. That end of what year would that have been? 16, 17?
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to compose myself. Toilet habits now are up for discussion. Right, I want to move it on again, 2017-18. Marty, I'm going to come to you first. He signed Salah, he signed Solanke, Robertson, Chamberlain. VVD early June goes, he brings them to Blackpool, they go on the rides, they have popcorn and all sorts of stuff, and it just doesn't happen. That's a drama that runs right up until the 24th of August. Most notably, Lucas leaves the club. You have the Coutinho saga that kicks off probably a week before the season starts. So it's not the most, you know, I suppose, perfect, smooth-running pre-season you'd be looking for. There's an indifferent start of the season, I suppose. But the big one that comes, Marty, is on the 22nd of October, and it's Spurs at Wembley. It's the 4-1 game. For me, this is the biggest watershed in Jurgen Klopp's career so far as Liverpool manager. Forget European nights, forget finals, forget, you know, signings, anything else. This, for me, is the biggest watershed moment in Klopp's tenure as Liverpool manager. Would you agree? Because that day, for me, it was make or break for a hell of a lot of players after that.
Yeah, I think in that little period we had either just or were about to lose to City as well, you know, quite heavily at the Etihad. This, you know, the beginning of last season was just dominated by the defence, wasn't it? Obviously, the Van Dijk saga happened. We didn't get him. Everyone was kind of screaming at, you know, why are we not getting another centre back? Why are we not getting another centre back? Yeah, it's obviously been a problem area for a few years up to that point. You know, we really wanted Van Dijk here. We knew then he was a class operator. Obviously, if we knew what we knew now, it would be even the meltdown last summer would have been even worse. But it just, I think it was his worst defeat, but I think it was stuff that we as fans and Klopp already knew. You know, Dejan Lovren, Mignolet, you know, it was next to Lovren that day, you know.
Matip.
They're just not good enough as a unit. You know, as a unit, you know, we had this argument a couple of weeks ago with the cup game. You know, as a unit, Mignolet or Karius, Matip, Lovren, Moreno, they're just not good enough. And we knew that at the time. And I think this kind of highlighted to Klopp. I think this is the first time we saw Klopp make a substitution before half time with Dejan Lovren. And I certainly thought, all right, fucking hell, he's done. That's it. He is done. He's had it with Lovren.
Yeah, he was having a mental breakdown on the pitch.
Yeah, Harry Kane, he sat all over him, didn't he? Harry Kane absolutely fucking slaughtered him all over the place. And he didn't even have to play well. This is the worst thing. If Harry Kane had an absolute blinder, you would just say, you know, he got the better of him. But he didn't do it. You know, he was very rash. You know, he just, that one on the halfway line where he tries to win the ball and it goes over him. You just think, here we go again. You know, that was exactly what we thought. Electric going forward, but at the back, here we go again. I think that kind of dawned on Klopp. I mean, I don't know what his plans were with Van Dijk, if he was going to go back in January anyway, but I think that was the moment where he said, look, enough's enough, we have to change this. And then obviously January comes round and then it all changes with Big Virgil. So, but yeah, it was an awful day for us, awful day.
It was an awful day, but now it probably feels like something that had to happen. It feels like it needed to happen for any of these, not doubts or any of these people, you know, oh, is he good enough, is he not good enough? And look, in fairness, Van Dijk comes in and Lovren plays beside him and is, for me, is outstanding for 6 months of last season. But just moving on through this season, and Ian, I'm going to come to you next, but after the Spurs game, we go 18 games unbeaten. And that includes a win that home to City 4-3 in the league that puts their unbeaten run to an end. We actually get beaten away on the 22nd of January by Swansea in a 1-0 defeat, which was torturous, to fucking say the least. We go out of the cup to West Brom. Coutinho leaves. Van Dijk comes in. A lot happens. But this European run is just moving nicely. Ian, I'm not going to go into it game by game or, you know, look at certain players or certain games or certain outcomes. But as you look at the Europa League, I suppose, 2 years previous, and you look at this one just this year, how much enjoyment does this bring to you, Ian, watching the teams that they're dispatching, to be perfectly honest with you, through Porto, City, Roma, and onto the final as opposed to Real Madrid? But how much enjoyment did you get out of this? How much did you think, no, Liverpool are the real deal now?
Well, I mean, you know what? I've said it in the past, and this is what I mean by it. Trophies, there's more to football than trophies and medals, and it's memories as well. And you can remember how your team were playing, and we were blowing sides away. I remember we went to Portugal's ground, and they hadn't lost at home in over a year. and we fucking annihilated them at home. And then everyone was saying, oh, you got City in the quarterfinals, you should have done. And then we just took them to pieces at home. And we were just the crowd. We had new songs, because you do have new songs when your team's flying, don't you? You go hand in hand. It took me, after the final, it took me about 2 months to genuinely start talking about football again. I was distraught, because I thought we were going to win it. I think we were the best team in the competition, so I thought we were going to win it. Obviously, football is not that simple, but mate, in 20 years' time, 30 years' time, we'll talk about those games when we were just smashing teams to pieces and our like, you know what I mean, like, fucking, everyone was terrified of our back three, our front three, those memories don't go, do you know what I mean? And if you talk to people from, like, the previous generation, it's all about games against like Saint Etienne and games like that, and it's we didn't win a trophy against Saint Etienne, and we didn't win a trophy again when we took City to pieces. But you'll remember that game more. I remember that game more than when we beat Arsenal in the FA Cup final, or you know, any of like Ulier's like cup wins that I barely remember. Do you know what I mean? It's just the best thing I can say about Klopp and Liverpool at the moment is we're just brilliant to watch, you know what I mean? When it works, it works brilliantly. But it's just so exciting. You look at the fixture list and you think, right, who have we got next? There's no trepidation. You can't wait to play them. You don't fear anyone. You're like, right, it's going to click this weekend. We're going to smash them. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. This is the best Liverpool side I've seen in 25 years. Seriously. Since we last won the league, this is the best Liverpool side we've had.
I'd agree with you.
We now have going against what I've just said, we now need to get a couple of trophies so that the entertainment matches up with the achievements.
Yeah, absolutely. Just going on to the end of the season, and I'm going to get to a couple of bits. So if you're worried I'm missing bits out, I'm not. I'm coming back to certain things. I'm just leaving until the end. Fourth place again, 75 points. And it goes down to the last day. Chelsea, I think, get beaten away at Newcastle, and we win handy against Brighton. But again, Champions League qualification is done. For me, there's progression in the way we're playing, the way we're able to adjust to different styles, teams, tactics, all that sort of stuff. There is a progression. And coming into this season, I suppose we'll probably do, you know, around Christmas, our lads are probably one of our podcasts. We'll do like a half-term report on this season. But you look at the progression into this season, and I think it's shown again the way we're doing things. But lads, there's 10 minutes left, so there's a couple of topics we want to just touch on before we leave, right? Finals is the fourth one. I want to mention City in the League Cup. I want to mention, obviously, Madrid in the European Cup, and you have Sevilla in the Europa League final 2016. There's a narrative going around that Klopp is no good in finals. You know, he bottles it and finals it. But for me, if you look at them finals, our own downfall in all three, to be perfectly honest with you. Tactically, most of the time it's individual errors. But Grace, for you, are you worried about this finals thing? Do you think, no, we'll get to a final and we'll do it. That narrative will go away, or is it something that you're genuinely worried about with Klopp? When he does, he lose some of his belief when he gets into finals. Is it something that kind of bothers you a little bit?
No.
Okay. Just now. Okay.
Not at all. Well, no, because I tell you, if you look at it from his Dortmund time, right there, invariably he was in finals against far better opposition, far bigger clubs with far bigger budgets. So it was always your Madrids or your Bayern Munichs of this world, right? So he comes to Liverpool. I tell you, the only disappointment, it was is gutting losing to Madrid, right? But the only one that we could level criticism, naivety, tactical naivety, call it what you want, would be the Seville one, right? Because I genuinely thought we were on a par with them and we were on the right high as well going into that. We just obliterated United, Dortmund, you know, etc. So that was the only one that you could say he froze or he didn't make the necessary changes at the time. So yeah, you could criticize him. But the others, look, the final against Man City goes to penalties. It's a lottery, right? We and at that time, I'm sure City were the champions. You know, Pep had them playing his brilliant brand of football. Madrid, they were going for their, what, third one in a row? You know, one of the greatest club sides ever. So you got to, you know, you always, Gav, you always know we go to the context. Everything has to have context. And, you know, you've got to look at Klopp's finals in isolation as opposed to sort of a collective problem or a mental issue or, is he mentally scarred by finals? Does he freeze? Not at all. And I think, as Ian says, you always look at memories and sort of you always look at trajectories and we're on an upwards and we're still on upwards. And that's the only thing you can ask for from your manager, from your club, from your owners. Always see that improvement. And we've just discussed 3 years, and from that first team and subs bench, look where we are now. As Ian says, we're bouncing into games, checking the dates, when we're playing next, who we're playing next, all in the WhatsApp group, we're going to fucking smash them. Making, you know, we're talking about everything's positive and everything's upwards. So, look, in terms of final, when he wins one, it's one of those ones. You know, when he wins that first one, and that's why I was sort of so adamant we go for the little ones, the whatever fucking cup is called. The League Cup.
The Mill Cup, yeah.
The room below.
I've got a catalogue over there, I'm thinking about that. So we've got to win a trophy to sort of, you know, justify the entertainment to a Leeds to success, because at the end of the day, the owners, you've got to look at it from the owners' point of view, the owners do want success. So do the fans. I mean, the fans love the ride. But, you know, just that one trophy would be absolutely amazing.
Okay. Right, I've four topics left, right? I'm going to do them quick for you. They are the best win you've seen from under Klopp, the worst loss, the best signing, the worst signing. I'll go around the table and I'll include myself in it where we go. So I'll give you a chance to have a little think. We'll go with the best win. I'll give you the best win, in my opinion, is City in the European Cup. 3-0, we bashed them first half and then we frustrate the life out of them second half with a brilliant defensive display, showing all sides of our game. Ian, best win for you?
Dortmund in the second leg.
Yeah, no, that's
a great one. I've been to quite a lot of games I've never been to, and that's the best atmosphere I've ever been to. Their fans, like, added to it as well, but just incredible.
Okay. Marty, best win for you?
Probably City at home, Champions League, season just gone. I think it was perfect display, 3 goals, kept out the most potent attack, which is brilliant.
Yeah, so you're with me. Grizz, best win for you?
Yeah, I've got to be with you, but I can't let Ian down as well. So in terms of entertainment, he's right. In terms of atmosphere, passion, the Dortmund game, but in terms of tactical performance, everything was just that City game at home was just the perfect home first leg performance.
Okay. Worst loss? I'm not going to go forth on this because I can't think of one. So, Ian, I'll come to you, the worst loss you can think of.
I should really say Spurs, but I'm going to have to say Madrid because it ruined me. But not the worst loss because we were shopping, just because of how it affected me.
Okay. Marty, your worst loss?
Again, right, Ian, I want to say Spurs, but I'd probably go Seville in the Europa League final. I just don't think we should have lost that game. I just don't.
Okay, Grizz, for you, the worst loss?
Because I'm a super fan, I'm going to go for the best worst loss, if you know what I mean. So I'm going to go for the Spurs one because I think that was a turning point in Klopp's managerial career of Liverpool Football Club. So I'll go for the Spurs loss.
Yeah. They're all good shows. I'm going to actually take the 5-0 away to City, because what killed me about that was that we were the better side. We genuinely were. I'll still to this day argue with anyone that says it's standing off. For me, it's not. And I think it knocks us and it gives City a monumental boost. It really does. You see them winning games last minute and stuff off the back of it. And, you know, it really gave them a push. So that for me. Best signing. Marty, I'll come to you first. The best sign during Klopp's tenure, what would it be?
I think it's Virgil van Dijk, but I would make a really strong case for Mane, purely for the fact that he came in when we didn't have Champions League football. We weren't a massively attractive proposition apart from Klopp, and he for me was probably the most important cog in getting us to where we are now. You know, he came in when we were alright, and he was just absolutely sparkling. So I would make a really big case for Mane or Van Dijk, probably Van Dijk just, but...
Okay, I'm going to take Van Dijk as your final answer. Ian, best signing?
Van Dijk. Just because, well, for a lot of reasons, but the main one is how much he's improved everyone around him. And I think Mane, Salah, Firmino, whatever, they can all have four games and it, you know what I mean, the team seems to suffer. But if Van Dijk has a poor game, everyone around him has improved because he's there. He doesn't see, in other words, he doesn't seem to have a poor game. His presence improves everyone around him. So no one even talks about 75 million. No one. And that's how good a signing he is.
Yeah. Grizz, for you, the best one?
Yeah, I done a poll, didn't I? So I left out VVD out of the options because for me it's clearly VVD. It's easy. But out of over 2,500 votes, people 40% went with Salah. Mo Salah as his best signing, but I'd like to put in a word for Mane as well, I think, and also
is this where you name the squad? Is this the bit where you name the squad? Yeah. They do it every fucking week.
Give it context. Now I go with apart from VVD, I go with Salah.
All right, okay. For me, it's Mane. Van Dijk is a good show. It's a great show, but for me, it's Mane because, like I said earlier, he changes the way we play. He brings that direct, fast pace. He changes the whole concept of what Liverpool's team is and what way we do things. And off the back of his signing, we add the likes of Salah. And don't get me wrong, Van Dijk was an integral signing. But for me, just the change in the way we played and the threat he brought, I just edge Mane over Van Dijk. But look, when we're naming names like Van Dijk, Salah, Mane, Robertson, when you're naming all these players, it's good to see. It's a good thing when you can't easily pick one. Last one, lads, we done a poll on this yesterday, which was the worst signing, and we got a bit of grief because we put Matip in there, and that was just after a discussion between a group of us, and Matip came up a couple of times because people, just a couple of them don't rate him. But for you, what's the worst signing that he's made, Chris?
For me, the worst signing he's made, Karius.
Okay. Yeah, there's not much more to say on that.
Yeah, well, no context here. I need to give context here. Karius said he's awful from the start. It's proven so.
I have to check your contract. You don't have to fucking go on. Look, you know, you can just say Karius and leave it at that. It's not your contract that you have to do.
You started asking me more questions. You didn't carry on. I just gave you one word answer.
he needs to shift that back. It's forcing its way out of his mouth.
Well, I'll tell you something. The only thing I would say is, does anyone want to stay on another half hour just for the crack and see what happens, Chris? We could do it. Steve-O's not letting me hear, but two thumbs up, three thumbs up.
I'm losing you guys. There's no reception. I'm losing you guys.
Are you in a tunnel? Come here. No, the worst sign, Grizz has got Macarius. I don't think there's any other answer, really. I genuinely don't. I don't like Matip, but I don't think there's any other answer than Karius. But look, I'll leave it up to the two lads. Ian, his worst sign?
There is no one
answer.
Karius, I hate him. He ruined me like...
Oh yeah, he did. He ruined your life. I remember that. No, there was 2 months where Ian's life was ruined. You couldn't even look at blonde people for about 2 months. It was mad.
And my daughter's blonde. It was very awkward.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. It got a bit ropey there mid June. Come here, Marty. Are you gonna give us any advance on Karius?
I think I have to go with that. But one quick point I just want to make off the back of it. It's a testament to how. Yeah, it is. I'm channeling my inner Grizz tonight. I just want to see you shit yourself live. one thing I want to add as testament to Klopp is that I think he's the best manager in the world at buying players for his system. I don't think there's anyone better than Klopp, apart from when he buys Karius, then he's shambles, but yeah.
Yeah. I always wonder about Karius if he didn't get that hand injury in the summer of 2016 and ends up ill. But look... where to now for Liverpool? Look, we're doing well in the league. Champions League is okay. The League Cup, don't worry about it. The FA Cup will come up and players will get a game. We're right in the mix. The international break we're in the middle of it, but we're back next week away to Huddersfield, I think, if I remember right. Saturday evening, I think it might be. But look, that's been a nice chat about Jurgen Klopp the first 3 years. hopefully there's a good few more to come with trophies and everything else to go along with it. I've been your host, Gav. I thank Marty. Thanks to Ian. Thanks to Grizz. Thanks to Laboon for our intro music. Thanks to Steve for producing. It's been good. Talk to you next Sunday. Over.
People say treat yourself like you need a reason, but McDonald's treats are perfect for every day. Like bold McCafe iced coffee, get any size for $1.69, or pick up any size sweet tea for a dollar, the largest served in an insulated cup that keeps your tea cold. Feeling a little extra something-something? Try the classic bakery sweets like an apple fritter. With so many ways to treat yourself, you don't need an excuse. Just come back tomorrow. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Hey, don't forget the Johnsons are coming over. I want to find a rosé Jill hasn't tried yet.
Let's go exploring at Total Wine. Their prices are ridiculously low.
Wondrous selection, helpful guides, always low prices. Total Wine and more.
Sports Social Podcast Network.